Headlines Media report that 9 members of an Afghan family, including 6 children, were killed in a U.S. drone attack on a residential neighborhood of Kabul. Iran's foreign minister, in his meeting with Syria's president, says the presence of foreign forces will not contribute to sustainable security and stability in the region. Also, Category 4 Hurricane Ida makes landfall in the U.S. state of Louisiana, leaving more than 500,000 households without power. Hello and welcome. Thank you for joining us. Beginning with our top story, American media report that a U.S. drone strike targeting a vehicle in a residential neighborhood of Kabul has killed 9 family members, including 6 children. A family member of the deceased is reported as saying that those targeted were ordinary people and did not have any affiliation with Daesh terror group. The U.S. claimed that it destroyed an explosive-laden vehicle that was suspected of preparing to attack Kabul airport. U.S. officials said secondary explosions following the strike showed the vehicle had been carrying a substantial amount of explosive material. The U.S. military later acknowledged that the attack, quote, may have caused civilian casualties. On Thursday, a bomb blast outside Kabul airport killed scores of people, including 13 U.S. troops. The attack was claimed by Daesh. Now, in order to discuss that story further, I'm joined by Mike Harris. He is an editor and also four veterans today joining us out of Phoenix. Mr. Harris, so the U.S. media and military report that the vehicles which were targeted by the U.S. Drone attacks, they had been carrying explosive material, and that, you know, these explosive materials caused secondary explosions which caused the loss of innocent lives. How do you think this secondary explosions can justify the loss of civilians' lives?
I do not. The U.S. drone strikes have a history of killing many, many millions of civilians in Afghanistan and in Iraq. They have a long history of doing this. It cannot be justified. Drone strikes are supposed to be surgical in nature and supposed to only hit the intended target. There was one time when the U.S. struck a wedding party in Afghanistan and killed 47 innocent people because they thought that there might have been a Taliban leader there. That turned out to be false. I believe this story is false as well. First of all, you can't believe anything that the U.S. media tells you, and you can't believe anything that the U.S. government tells you. They are known to lie to our own people here in particular in order to try to gin up war support for a second foray, perhaps going back into Afghanistan, which I hope they do not do. I truly hope that the Taliban shows extreme restraint and does not take the bait and get drawn into further conflict with the U.S., and that the Taliban will guarantee the safety of U.S. citizens getting out of Afghanistan. I really implore them to, because that would be the best way to remove the U.S. presence permanently from Afghanistan. The U.S. has made every mistake militarily and politically that you could make in how they've handled the entire situation with Afghanistan. Everyone needs to remember Afghanistan had nothing to do with 9/11. And the reason they've been there for the last 20 years is for other reasons, primarily the $3 trillion a year opium trade that they don't want to give up. And the U.S. military, or let me rephrase that, the U.S. intelligence agencies use Daesh as a reason to justify military presence in places that they want to occupy. So Daesh is not what it seems to be. It is an excuse to put U.S. military presence where they don't need. We watched something very similar to this happen when the U.S. was leaving Iraq, and suddenly there was Daesh, and they captured, you know, hundreds and hundreds of vehicles that were left for them by General David Petraeus. And then they took the war into Syria. Well, I have met with the Syrian Arab Army, and I know that Daesh was taking their wounded to Israel for treatment. So Daesh is not the radical Islamic organization that is portrayed to be. Far from it. It is a front made to look like a radical Islamic organization in order to give the U.S. and other military powers a reason to continue the military occupation and the war against the Afghan people.
Well, how does this change the dynamics of the evacuation process, in your opinion?
Well, first of all, the U.S. has been very feckless in their approach to using drone strikes. And I'm going to ask the Taliban and their leadership to please show great restraint on this and do not interfere with the evacuation process. As far as the Afghan citizens, they should stay in Afghanistan. But as far as U.S. citizens, do not impede or in any way inhibit the departure of U.S. citizens from Afghanistan. You don't want them there. We would like to have them home safe. And I would really like to, again, ask the Taliban leadership and anyone in a responsible position to not impede their departure from there. Please allow the transport jets to get in and out safely and allow only U.S. citizens to exit Afghanistan, keep the Afghan citizens there for themselves. Most of the ones that are exiting now were those who were involved with National Security Director, National Director of Security in Afghanistan, as well as the opium trade. These are the people who are embezzling the billions of dollars from U.S. construction projects. These are the ones that the U.S. wants to get out. None of these people that were in the occupation government in Afghanistan under the U.S. were clean or legitimate people. The U.S. has a long history of working with criminals and gangsters in order to maintain a military presence in whatever country that they're currently waging war with. We saw this in Vietnam. We've seen it in other countries as well. Now we're seeing it in Afghanistan. This is a very, very corrupt government, very big in the opium trade, very big in a lot of nefarious activities, which is not the reason that the U.S. was in Afghanistan at all. And the entire presence of the U.S. was based on a lie of 9/11. And these chickens are coming home to roost now for the U.S., and it's about time. Now, trust me, I'm a loyal American, but I do not support the criminal government of Joe Biden, and I do not support the criminal occupation that occurred under George W. Bush or any president since then who enabled that. And quite frankly, I'm very angry with how everything has been handled with Afghanistan for the past 20 years, because these are innocent people, mostly agrarian. They live in the hills. They keep to themselves. They don't bother anybody. They're very strict religious Islamic people. There's a little conflict with Christianity there, but they certainly did not deserve 20 years of warfare. And the whole reason for being there was not what they stated. There was the war on terror was a created war by the U.S. in order to justify military expenditures. There's so much money involved in the U.S. economy based on the war machine, not just the opium trade, which is $3 trillion a year, but the Northrop Grumman's, the McDonnell Douglas's, the Boeing's, all these defense contractors are going to lose money unless the U.S. maintains a state of perpetual warfare. And quite frankly, the U.S. Population is sick of it, where we're done, we're tired, we want to bring our folks home, and we want to bring them home safely. So if these big companies cannot support their business model without a perpetual war machine, then they need to go out of business and cease to exist. Enough of this already. I mean, I am enraged by this drone strike today, and that they have killed more innocent people and more innocent children. And the Afghan people really have a legitimate complaint against the U.S. Government and how the U.S. has managed this war. These are war crimes, people. And the people who are responsible need to be brought to justice, both domestically here as well as in the international courts. But the American people do not support this. We never have. We never will. We reacted poorly to the 9/11 atrocity, but when you look at 9/11, that is not what they said it was either. That was a big lie. 19 Arabs with box cutters had nothing to do with it, and Afghanistan and the Afghan people had nothing to do with 9/11. This was one of the worst foreign policy mistakes over the last 20 years that any country could have ever made, and shame on the U.S. and shame on U.S. leadership for allowing this to happen.
Thank you so much. I've been talking to Mike Harris. He's an editor with Veterans Today, joining us out of Phoenix. Now let's move on. Remains of the American service members killed in a Thursday bombing in Afghanistan have arrived back in the U.S. The bodies arrived at an airbase in Delaware during a ceremony attended by President Joe Biden and his wife. The service members lost their lives during the evacuation of foreign nationals and locals from the Afghan capital. The bombing outside Kabul airport marked the deadliest attack for U.S. troops in Afghanistan over a decade. The U.S. has come under criticism over what is seen as a hasty departure from Afghanistan after 20 years of war. The conflict is the longest overseas war the U.S. has waged. Iran's foreign minister is in the Syrian capital, Damascus, following his trip to Iraq. Hossein Amir Abdullahian says the presence of foreign forces will not contribute to sustainable security and stability in the region. Our correspondent Mohammed Ali reports.
Iranian Foreign Minister Hossein Amir Abdullahian arrived in Damascus on Sunday. He sat down with Syrian President Bashar al-Assad and discussed with him steps taken by both sides to enhance bilateral cooperation with the aim of reaching a higher level of partnership in economy and trade. In the meeting, Assad reaffirmed that the ongoing cooperation between the two countries had positive results in terms of protecting the interests of the two peoples, mainly in fighting terrorism. Abdullahian, for his part, briefed Assad on the outcome of the Baghdad Cooperation and Partnership Conference. He asserted that Iran will continue to support Syria in fighting all forms of terror, mainly economic terrorism.
Both countries are working on a roadmap to develop relations as well as trade and economic cooperation to tackle the sanctions imposed on them. We discussed the latest developments in the region. Improving economic cooperation between both countries' private sector is an important issue which both sides regard as crucial.
The Iranian official also held a separate meeting with his Syrian counterpart Faisal al-Maqdad. They discussed regional and international developments, saying that foreign presence in the region will not bring security and stability. Maqdad underlined the importance of steadfastness in the face of all Western plots and pressure in order to achieve victory.
We discussed bilateral relations, the situation in Syria and Iran, as well as mutual challenges, the steadfastness of Syria and Iran, as well as all those who want to achieve justice, freedom, sovereignty, and independence in our world, will lead them to victory over terrorism and those who question our capability to face challenges.
Abdullahian concluded his meetings by holding talks with heads of Syria-based Palestinian factions, renewing Iran's support for Palestinians' struggle and their fight for their legitimate rights.
Mr. Abdullahian's visit comes shortly after the formation of the new cabinet in Iran. The visit is a reiteration of Iran's steadfast stance towards Syria, based on support to the government and people in the fight on terror and for rebuilding the country. Hamad Ali, Damascus.
The International Organization for Migration has warned about the dire humanitarian situation in Yemen. The organization wrote on its Twitter page that the country is facing the worst humanitarian crisis in the world. It added that well over 16 million Yemenis have no access to safe water and sanitation. The IOM maintained it reached out to more than 2 million Yemenis last year, providing them with water and hygiene services. The organization highlighted in a report that the Saudi war on Yemen keeps displacing citizens. According to the report, 50,000 Yemenis were forced from their homes in the first half of 2021 alone. Category 4 Hurricane Ida has made landfall in the U.S. state of Louisiana. The hurricane is creating winds up to 240 kilometers per hour. Over 300,000 people are asked to take shelter west of New Orleans. More than 500,000 households are left without power. Utility companies say the outages might last for weeks. The Federal Emergency Management Agency has deployed over 2,400 staff to help with rescue operations. The entire National Guards in Louisiana have also been dispatched to join rescue operations. U.S. President Joe Biden says the devastation is likely to be immense. Colin Campbell says people are facing grave danger if not properly sheltered in place.
And of course, when you have winds this strong, anything that is not really locked down or is in the ground very firmly or very substantively is going to be airborne. That could mean houses, that could mean cars, car parts, that could mean signs, that could mean people. that are trying to brave the hurricane, which there are many in Louisiana and parts of the Gulf Coast of the United States who think that they have experience in dealing with hurricanes, so they're going to stay right in place. If they aren't protected, if they aren't in a safe location, they too will be at risk of losing their lives. And that's why you had many health officials and state officials really urging people to leave town and so they're not in the line of this hurricane. Otherwise, it could prove to be very, not just catastrophic, but devastating for businesses, for people, for pets even. And they're expecting this to go on for several hours as the Hurricane Ida does not seem to show any signs of slowing down just yet.
Greek police and protesters have clashed during a demonstration in central Athens against mandatory COVID-19 vaccinations. Police used tear gas and water cannon to disperse a group of people who threw flares and other objects during the protest. More than 7,000 people rallied outside the Greek parliament to protest against the mandatory inoculations. Similar rallies in Athens last month also saw violence. About 5.7 million people out of a total population of 11 million have been fully vaccinated in the country. Thousands have taken to the streets of the German capital to protest the government's coronavirus restrictions. The protesters chanted slogans against vaccination programs and called for an end to the pandemic measures. Some demonstrators clashed with the police. The protests took place despite a ban on demonstrations. Germany is facing a fourth wave of COVID infections. On Sunday, it reported around 8,500 new cases in 24 hours. The government has announced that it will stop offering free tests from October the 11th to push more people to get vaccinated. Moreover, people will need to be vaccinated, test negative, or have a health certificate to enter indoor restaurants and gyms. Officials in Australia's New South Wales warned that hospitals will be overwhelmed in a matter of few months given the rising number of coronavirus infections and related deaths there.
For example, given the case numbers are where they are, I suspect in October we'll probably have the highest number that we do in intensive care. I suspect we've not reached the peak yet there at all. But how hard we work now will make sure we keep people out of hospital, and that's really important.
The Premier urged people to get vaccinated and protect themselves against COVID. Her comments come as New South Wales reported a record number of over 1,200 coronavirus infections on Sunday. It also reported six more deaths. More than half of Australians have been in weeks-long lockdowns as officials struggle to curb the outbreak. Australia has so far reported more than 50,000 infections and nearly 1,000 deaths. Well, that is it for this edition of World News.
A diverse range of programs. Youth. Spirituality. Culture. Eastern Tales. Roundtable discussions. Politics. All produced by IRIB English Radio. Our website is www.parstoday.com/en.
Face surveillance is so invasive of privacy, so discriminatory against people of color, and so likely to trigger false arrest that the U.S. government should not be using face surveillance at all, said one privacy advocate. In this regard, we have prepared an article for you written by Julia Conley Ryder. This article is published under the heading plans the expansion of facial recognition of U.S. agencies called disturbing. Stay tuned for the details of this article, please. Digital rights advocates reacted harshly to a new internal U.S. government report detailing how 10 federal agencies have plans to greatly expand their reliance on facial recognition in the years ahead. The Government Accountability Office surveyed federal agencies and found 10 have specific plans to increase their use of technology by 2023. Surveilling people for numerous reasons, including to identify criminal suspects, track government employees' level of alertness, and match faces of people on government property with names on watch list. The report was released as lawmakers face pressure to pass legislation to limit the use of facial recognition technology by the government and law enforcement agencies. Senators Ron Wyden and Ron Paul introduced the Fourth Amendment is Not for Sale Act in April to prevent agencies from using illegitimately obtained biometric data, such as photos from the software company Clearview AI. The company has scraped billions of photos from social media platforms without approval and is currently used by hundreds of police departments across the United States. The bill has not received a vote in either chamber of Congress yet. The plans described in the GAO report, tweeted law professor Andrew Ferguson, author of The Rise of Big Data Policing, are what happens when Congress fails to act. Six agencies, including the Department of Homeland Security, or DHS, Justice, DOJ, Defense, DOD, Health and Human Services, HHS, Interior, and Treasury, plan to expand their use of facial recognition technology to generate leads in criminal investigations, such as identifying a person of interest by comparing their image against mugshots, the GAO reported. DHS, DOJ, HHS, and the Interior all reported using Clearview AI to compare images with publicly available images from social media. The DOJ, DOD, HHS, Department of Commerce, and Department of Energy said they plan to use the technology to maintain what the report calls physical security, by monitoring their facilities to determine if an individual on a government watch list is present. The report reads, for example, HHS reported that it used the facial recognition technology system AnyVision to monitor its facilities by searching live camera feeds in real time for individuals on watch list or suspected of criminal activity, which reduces the need for security guards to memorize these individuals' faces. This system automatically alerts personnel when an individual on a watch list is present. The Electronic Frontier Foundation said the government's expanded use of technology for law enforcement purposes is one of the most disturbing aspects of the GAO report. Face surveillance is so invasive of privacy, so discriminatory against people of color, and so likely to trigger false arrest that the government should not be using face surveillance at all, the organization told MIT Technology Review. According to the Washington Post, three lawsuits have been filed in the last year by people who say they were wrongly accused of crimes after being mistakenly identified by law enforcement agencies using facial recognition technology. all three of the plaintiffs are black men. Federal study in 2019 showed that Asian and black people were up to 100 times more likely to be misidentified by the technology than white men. Native Americans had the highest false identification rate. Maine, Virginia, and Massachusetts have banned or sharply curtailed the use of facial recognition systems by government entities, and cities across the country, including San Francisco, Portland, and New Orleans, have passed strong ordinances blocking their use. But many of the federal government's planned uses for the technology, Jack Lapperkirk of the Project on Government Oversight told the Post, present a really big surveillance threat that only Congress can solve.
Food for thought.
Hello, dear listeners, and how about pondering on a wise saying from the immortal martyr of Karbala, Imam Hussein, peace be upon him, on freedom of conscience? The Holy Prophet's grandson told those who had ganged up against him in the hope of getting the paltry positions of the transient world, if you don't have religion, at least be free men in your worldly affairs.
This is IRIB English Radio. Please log on to our website, www.parstoday.com/EM.
This is for a better life.
فرمود بعثت لأتمم مكارم الأخلاق.
The Holy Prophet of Islam says, I have been sent to complete noble manners.
أعوذ بالله من الشيطان الرجيم بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم. Dear brothers and sisters, السلام عليكم ورحمة الله وبركاته. You're welcome to For a Better Life with me, Javed Akbari. In this episode, we are going to discuss tawakkul. Tawakkul is a very important concept. What do we mean by tawakkul? Many of us have heard of the concept of tawakkul, but still we do not have a clear concept of what tawakkul is. As Muslims, we should never underestimate the need to take precautions to protect ourselves. We are taught to take precautions as much as we can and then leave the rest to Allah. And leaving the rest to Allah is what we mean by tawakkul, is what the concept of tawakkul is about. We strengthen our faith by increasing our prayers and supplications to Allah and doing that which pleases Him. So tawakkul has largely to do with consigning your matters to Allah and putting your trust in Allah. As I said, a lot of people unfortunately have no clear concept of tawakkul, and they do not have a proper understanding of what tawakkul is and what it means. But there are verses in the Quran which says, فَإِذَا عَذَمْتَ فَتَوَكَّلْ اللَّهِ إِنَّ اللَّهَ يُحِبُّ الْمُتَوَكِّلِينَ. Allah announces His love for the people of tawakkul. Allah announces His love for those people who leave the matter to Allah. So when you are firm in making decision, فَإِذَا عَزَمْتَ فَتَوَكَّلْ عَلَى اللَّهِ. When you are firm in making a decision, then have tawakkul in Allah. For surely Allah loves the people of tawakkul, verse 159 of chapter 3. So not only this, but Allah says He is enough for those who have tawakkul in Him. Hasbunallah ni'mal wakil. That is what we usually hear from scholars, from people who give lectures. Whoever has tawakkul in Allah, He is sufficient for them. And this is the translation of Hasbunallah ni'mal wakil. You have probably realized that, for example, tawakkul is not putting everything to God and not doing anything yourselves. You know, tawakkul means that you have to take every precautionary measure to protect yourselves, to achieve your goals, and to pursue your objectives. At the same time, put your trust in Allah. That's what tawakkul is. And Allah is referred to as Al-Wakil in the Quran, which can be loosely translated as the guardian, you know. Hasbunallah ni'mal wakil means that God is, you know, sufficient. And He is the best wakil, the best. He is the one who can be the best of all guardians. Allah is sufficient for us, and He is the best of guardians. So wakil means guardian, someone who can be trusted. And the term wakil is a legal term which refers to a power of attorney. It is someone you trust, who you transfer responsibility to, knowing that they will make decisions on your behalf in your best of interests. Allah is our wakil, meaning we transfer responsibility to Him and Him alone to take care of us and do things in the best of our interests. In other words, He is our guardian, He is our protector, and always our back.
We were given so many prizes. We changed the desert into oases. We built buildings of different lengths and sizes, and we felt so very satisfied. We bought and bought and couldn't stop buying. We gave charity to the poor cause we couldn't stand the crying. We thought we paid our dues, but in fact, to ourselves we're just lying. Oh, I'm walking with my head lowered in shame for my place. I'm walking with my head lowered for my race. Yes, it's easy to blame everything on the West, when in fact, all focus should be on ourselves. I'm walking with my head lowered in shame for my place. I'm walking with my head lowered for my race. Yes, it's easy to blame everything.
is satisfied. Is Allah satisfied? Is Allah satisfied?
Now there is actually a saying from the Holy Prophet who says, "Aqil thumma tawakkal." And also there is a proverb in Arabic which says, "Aqil al-ba'ir thumma tawakkal." You know, when the Prophet said, "Tie your camel," we can understand this as lock your car. You have to tie your camel to something and make sure that your camel is tied to something and it does not walk away and it does not run away. And then you can do tawakkul. So it means that you have to do every precautionary, you have to take every precautionary measure to protect your property, to protect your house, to protect your belongings. And then after taking every measure, you can trust Allah, you can leave the rest to Allah. In modern time, of course, we can say you should lock your car instead of saying tie your camel. Because a person who has misunderstood tawakkul will, once they have parked their car, okay, they will leave their windows down, leave their valuables and belongings on display and not lock their car. Okay, they would say that Allah will look after the car and then there is nothing to worry about. Such individuals, of course, don't actually have tawakkul. Instead, they have something called tamanni, which is actually having false hopes in Allah. As Muslims, as someone who know that God sees the truth and God protects everything, we have to take every measure to protect ourselves. Of course, we have to lock our doors when we leave our house. We have to lock our car when we leave our car. We should protect our property, our valuables. We should not leave anything on display. And we should not leave anything exposed to the criminals, to the thieves. And after we protect ourselves and everything, then we can leave the rest to God. The true meaning of tawakkul is that we do whatever we can and then leave the rest to Allah. This is what tawakkul actually is. In other words, we put our windows up, take valuable belongings with us, then lock our cars, and we then trust Allah, and that Allah will take care of it for us. Okay, and this is what tawakkul means. And even if something were to happen, we can still find solace in knowing that we did what we could, and that the rest was up to the qada and qadar of Allah. Because the things which have happened is out of our control. We have done, we have fulfilled our responsibility and done what we were supposed to do. To make the story short and to be brief, to summarize, for the brevity of time, I would say that tawakkul, dear brothers and sisters, it is an essential part of our faith, and correctly understanding and applying it is what helps us navigate and get through life. You know, may Allah make us from the people of true tawakkul. May Allah help us consign our matters to Allah. May Allah help us put our trust in Allah. And may He grant us goodness in this life and the next. So tawakkul is an essential element of faith. Without tawakkul, of course, we will always live a life of distrust. We will always live a life of anxiety, a life full of worry, a life full of stress and depression. But if we consign our matters to Allah, and if we put our trust on God, then obviously we will live in solace, we will live in comfort, we will live in peace, and we will live in confidence. And that's what we should always do. We should consign our matters to Allah and put our trust in Him. And as long as we put our trust in Allah, as long as we leave the matter to Allah after taking every precautionary measure, then our conscience is clear and we are not to blame ourselves. Inshallah, we will carry on our discussions in the following episode regarding hope, regarding tawakkul, and these are the concepts which need to be discussed further. Until then, wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
Your mercy, your love is all I need. 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 All I need.
Paleontologists in Egypt have discovered fossilized bones of an ancient whale that could probably walk on land and swim in water. Scientists found the skull, jaw, and some ribs and identified the parts as the 43-million-year-old ancestor of the modern whale. It's also the earliest type of semi-aquatic whale found in Africa. The whale is estimated to have been 10 meters in length, weighing over half a ton, and was likely a top predator. Scientists say the four-legged whale is a key new species that helps trace the transition of whales from land to sea. Paleontologists believe that the ancestors of modern whales developed from deer-like mammals living on land over a 10-million-year period. The fossilized remains were discovered in Egypt's western desert, which was once covered by sea. A French beekeeper has invented a unique device to keep his beehives safe after suffering a traumatic loss of 35 of them to hungry Asian hornets. The device is a one-way mechanism that baits hornets with sugary water, and once they get in through a funnel, they never come out. Originally, the trap was made of wooden crates and metal mesh, but now they are 3D printed in plastic. Dennis made his first lobster pot to catch the hornets in 2016 and now makes the traps in bulk due to growing demand. The Asian hornets are an invasive insect that arrived in France via a pottery shipment from China. The killer hornet can eat through an entire hive in a matter of hours. There is a festive occasion for a Mexican zoo amid a rare birth boom in its lion enclosure. Keepers and visitors are amazed to hear roars of three newborn cubs. The three baby lions that are trying very hard to roar were born just 2 weeks ago in Zacango Zoo. The zookeepers separate them from their mother for a few hours a day to feed them because their mother cannot produce milk. The two female and male cubs would live under constant surveillance for a couple of months so that their health is reassured. They are reported to be currently in good health.
A bunker built by the German army in France during World War II has now been given a new lease of life by turning it into an underground guest house. A 4,300 square feet bunker located off Breton coast in northern France was originally built by Nazi troops after invading the country in 1940. The area has been the home of hundreds of such fortifications of the German army. Half of them have been buried along sandy beaches. This underground guest house now belongs to the 52-year-old bunker enthusiast. Serge Collio says it took 18 months to dig out the buried trench and turn it into a fully functional guest house. He says an attempt was made to preserve some historic aspects during its renovation.
What is nice is to now be able to spend time here, to have dinner, to spend the night in things like this. So we adapted the bunker while preserving a certain feel. We wanted to give the building a second life, so we are not going to live in the past forever. We saved some aspects, you know, where you are. There are historic cues, but this isn't a museum either.
Collio says many French visitors and foreigners, including Germans, have stayed in the guest house since the bunker opened a year ago. The world's highest expressway has opened to traffic in China's Tibet Autonomous Region. It's nearly 300 kilometers long and has an average elevation of 4,500 meters. It connects the cities of Nacho and Lhasa, shortening the travel time from 6 to 3 hours. The road passes through many picturesque areas, such as snowy mountains, grasslands, and wetlands. The expressway is also environmentally friendly. Special passages have been devised for animals to get from one side of the freeway to the other. An architectural firm in Singapore has come up with a unique idea to deal with the country's constant warm temperatures. A hotel on the island's busy business district has been covered with more than 20 species of creeping plants to keep the place cooler. A layer of vegetation blankets the facade of the Red Tower, which is growing thicker with the passage of time. The plants reduce the ambient temperature by a combination of water evaporation and releasing cooler vapor. The architect says the tower is 10 to 20 degrees Celsius cooler than nearby buildings. The green facades also reduce harmful carbon emissions, which account for over 20% in a sprawling city.
Youngest panda at the U.S.'s Smithsonian Zoo, National Zoo that is, has turned one. Baby panda Xiao Qiji celebrates the milestone by eating a specially made fruitsicle cake with his mother, Mei Xiang, in Washington, D.C. Both pandas dug into their icy cake, an ideal treat in the hot and humid summers of the U.S. capital. Xiao has captured hearts and had many first-time experiences. Some of them include sliding and tumbling around in snow and recognizing his name, which translates to little miracle in English.
He was born during the pandemic, and given the age of his mother, we didn't think she'd have another cub. And the fact that we, not just that we had this miracle, but he has just been, he's given people moments of pure joy and pure happiness.
Xiao Qiji is a fourth surviving cub of Mei Xiang. Its older siblings now live in China under an agreement with the United States. Pandas have been reclassified from endangered to vulnerable thanks to reforestation to expand habitats in which the species can survive. There are an estimated 1,800 giant pandas in the wild.
The annual Buddha sculpture has been unveiled at the New York State Fair to the delight of eager spectators. The artwork was sponsored for the 53rd year by the American Dairy Association. It was carved out of 400 kilograms of Buddha and took 10 days to build. The sculpture is dedicated to the children who will be going back to their normal lives after the coronavirus pandemic is over. Once the fair ends, all of the butter will be broken down and turned into renewable energy. Switzerland is constructing its biggest alpine solar plant in an effort to secure renewable energy throughout the year. The 2.2 megawatt plant is expected to be completed by the end of 2021. The Mutzi site will include nearly 5,000 solar modules and produce around 3.3 million kilowatt hours of electricity. It will have the option of delivering half of its production during the winter when temperatures drop to sub-zero levels in Switzerland. The developers say the project makes more environmental than fiscal sense. Currently, the country gets less than 4% of its electricity from solar power.
The Light is a short bulletin in which we bring you a lot of interesting news in different fields like animals' life, cultural events, funny trending news, and more from every corner of the world.
An cemetery in Japan is giving disabled people a new lease on life by including them in its workforce. Dawn Cafe uses robotic staff controlled remotely by people who are handicapped. Around 50 people with mental and physical disabilities help run the cafe. The pilots come from all over Japan as well as overseas. The venue was established with support from major companies and crowdfunding. It has become more than just a place to eat for its customers.
Customers here are not exactly coming to this location just to meet the Orihime robots. They come here because of the people behind Orihime, and they will come back to see them again.
For Kentaro, Dawn Cafe has a very personal touch. In his childhood, he was left unable to go to school due to a period of bad health. Now he aspires to come up with ways to further the inclusion of disabled people in society. Crowds of visitors and conservationists have been delighted by the birth of a rare orangutan in the Spanish town of Fuengirola. The new residents of the safari park made its first public appearance 2 weeks after its birth. The baby, yet to be named, is the only one to be born in a European zoo over the past 12 months. The park has launched a program to conserve Borneo orangutans that are considered as a critically endangered species. Their population has declined by more than 50% over the past century. Dozens of baby turtles have made their way to the sea after an unexpected overnight hatch in Italy. Italian volunteers were surprised by track marks of the hatchlings from an unknown nest in Sicily. Some of the eggs hatched in the morning. An environmental group following the turtles' movement said that 74 hatchlings made it to the sea while 5 didn't. The reptiles are an endangered species of oceanic turtle that also live in the Mediterranean Sea. Their population has declined in recent years due to hunting, loss of beach nesting sites, over-harvesting of their eggs, and being caught in fishing gear.
A Slovenian enthusiast has discovered a new cave in the Alpine country, which is staggering visitors by its awe-inspiring looks. Ludwig Husu, a 63-year-old cave explorer, has come across a cavern that runs 60 meters deep in the ground. It's located in the country's karst region, an area of land made up of limestone. Some 14,000 caves are buried under the green forest of Slovenia, hiding away breathtaking stalactite and stalagmite formations. The limestone region is so pristine and uncharted that the European Space Agency has used the caves to train astronauts.
Astronauts also know that the karst world is exceptional, special in a similar way to how a space environment can be. It is an unknown environment where you do not know what to expect at your next step. They have been here to train for precisely that, how to help yourself in a dark area where you're not sure what's going on and everything is new. That's very good training for space, and they have been very pleased to be able to prepare for something they might find in space.
Over 150 species, some looking like alien creatures, have been discovered inside the cave systems. They include an ancient aquatic salamander called the little dragon that can live up to 100 years. The animal was previously considered living proof that dragons had once existed. Some cave systems in Slovenia stretch for tens of kilometers. They are so winding and deep that scientists say large parts of them remain undiscovered despite exploration efforts dating back hundreds of years. As the U.S. is experiencing its worst heat wave, Boston zookeepers are working extra hard to keep the animals cool to avoid overheating. Some get frozen treats, and some, like the yak, get a water hosing several times a day when the temperatures rise. The hardest part is cooling down animals belonging to cold climates, like the reindeer. Since reindeer don't like water, the hosing down is a big no. Instead, the poor animals sit in front of a desk fan all day to stay away from the heat. The birds have it a little easier as they spend most of their time in air-conditioned dens.
In Indonesia, a group of university lecturers have come up with an idea of building a robot to help people during the coronavirus pandemic. The robot is assembled from electric household items like pots and pans and an old television monitor. It was named Delta after the new coronavirus variant ripped through Indonesia. The robot was initially built to entertain residents of a village in the country's East Java province. But the head of the robot-making project says he decided to shift his function into assisting people dealing with a deadly virus.
With this new Delta variant and the surging number of COVID-19 cases, I decided to turn the robot used for public services into one that sprays disinfectant and delivers food and necessities of residents who are self-isolating. I'm shifting the function to serve only the members of the community who are in need.
The interesting thing about a robot is that it greets people when delivering things to isolated residents. The developers of the robot say it has been built in a joint project with local people and is by no means a high-tech device.
We don't know much about woolly mammoths that went extinct some 10,000 years ago, except there are scant references in archaeology books. Now scientists have discovered that the giant mammals could walk incredibly long distance. Scientists from the University of Alaska have concluded that a male mammoth named Kik covered enough ground in its 28-year lifespan to encircle the Earth twice. To come up with the data, paleontologists analyzed one of Kik's well-preserved tusks. They say the animal lived with a herd through its infancy and youth, and then went on to live alone. Scientists hope they will learn more about mammoths by analyzing further data from Kik's remains.
This is IRIB English Radio. Our website is www.parstoday.com/en.